You were the sound engineer on the documentary And This Is Free, which has finally been released on DVD. Tell us about how you hooked up with filmmaker Mike Shea and maybe a little bit about the genesis of the film.
Well, I was a student at the University of Chicago. We were doing a film about the college. I was in Doc Films, the student club there. And Mike Shea had been a life photographer. He did a lot of photography for Ebony Magazine, a still photographer. And he really wanted to get into movies. He was seeing the big picture magazines going away, and he saw that, you know, the kind of work that he was interested in, which was a kind of documentary storytelling, seemed to be moving to television. So he was just starting to get into film, and I met him somehow. He was doing some shooting for us on that film, or, you know, really volunteering some time, and somehow I met him that way. And I started working for him, you know, part-time. And after I started working for him, he started doing this film on Maxwell Street. He was looking to do a film to kind of, you know, sort of make a name for himself, you know, to do a first film, self-financed. And he had met Mike Bloomfield, who was a young, you know, guitar genius, who was like, I don't know, 17, 18 years old. And he knew all these blues musicians down on Maxwell Street. And so he started introducing Mike to the blues musicians on Maxwell Street. Shea really got the idea to do a film about the whole street that really featured all the different kinds of people and music that were down there. And we spent, geez, I've said it in other interviews, and now I've forgotten, it was like 19 Sundays or something, 16 maybe it was, you know, and we would just go down there every Sunday. The seasons changed, you know, we worked into the winter, it got really cold. And we would film whatever was happening. Well, there was just everything there. You know, there was the remnant of some of the old Jewish shops that were there along the street that would bring their stuff out and selling it. But the big thing was all these people who came in from the whole metropolitan area. You know, they'd come in these little vans or trucks with just all kinds of things to sell. And it was a true, you know, now it was a true marketplace. You know, you go a lot of times now to these flea markets and stuff, and everybody's selling the same stuff, and it all came from China, you know. And this was like, you know, there'd be a guy who would have every kind of rusty bolt and plumbing piece of junk, but if you just needed some particular thing, he might have it, and you could get it really cheap. You know, and there'd be hubcaps, and there'd be, you know, just all kinds of old stuff, all kinds of old records and stuff, too, that you could find, and clothing and, you know, china and, you know, a lot of it was stuff that I don't know actually know where it came from. There seemed to be people who specialized in certain kind of things, you know, and they must have been going to, like, yard sales and estate sales and stuff and buying up this stuff and bringing it down to Maxwell Street. And, you know, some of the stuff was probably hot, although not nearly as much as some of the guys who would go around on the street and wanted you to think was hot. You know, they open their coat and show you all this jewelry, you know, which wasn't necessarily stolen, but was just, you know, knockoffs or something. There was all this music down there. You know, there was music right off the street on the back porch where you see in the film, you know, Robert Nighthawk and some of those people playing. But there were the pitchmen on the street, you know, just making their pitches and stuff about all kinds of things, both religious and you know, just for, you know, some kind of stuff to put on your car to get the bugs off, or, you know, the magic spark plug that was going to save you gas money. And all this stuff weaved together. And then there were people actually would stroll up and down the street, like Arvella Gray. You know, he was there almost every Sunday when we were there, blind Arvella Gray. You know, it was incredible. You know, I was already listening when I was a student. I was listening to Spurvis Spann, you know, on WVON. But then when I went down there and heard this stuff live, it was just, you know, fantastic. And sometimes Mike Bloomfield would be sitting in and playing with him. I never got Shea to actually include Mike in the picture because Mike was such a purist. You know, this white kid from the North Shore didn't fit with his stereotype of what the blues would look like. But, you know, and they were playing. It was a gig, you know. They were, you know, they'd have somebody walking through the crowd and collecting money and, you know, at the end of the day, you'd see the band guys divvying it up. you know, with you know, however it was doled out. I think, you know, I don't think it was doled out equally. There was, you know, kind of a hierarchy of who got what. But, you know, it was, you know, there were people dancing. It was a real scene, you know. It was music on the street, and it was a part of that scene, and it was very exciting kind of stuff.